Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, December 1st, 2017. South Sudanese civil society activists welcome Troika's statement to South Sudan's leaders.
The Troika countries should not jump away from this process and entirely push it to the South Sudanese people, because they were part of that agreement and they have the resources, they have every opportunity to pressure these parties to the agreement to move this process forward.
And a spokesman for an opposition group says they will only participate if fighting stops in South Sudan.
This has been our position also of other political parties, which we presented to the high-level delegation that came.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese activists welcome the decision by the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway to support the high-level revitalization forum on South Sudan's collapsed 2015 peace agreement. The Troika says if the forum is going to be successful, it must be inclusive. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The Troika countries were the funders and facilitators of the peace agreement signed in August 2015. But just days after its signing, the deal was violated by both government forces and opposition fighters, and most political analysts agree the agreement has collapsed. In its statement released on Thursday, the Troika called on all parties to commit to the 2015 agreement and participate in the revitalization forum, which U.S. officials have said is the last chance to restore peace and stability in South Sudan. Jame David, executive director of the Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, or FODAC, says this time around, the Troika should assert itself more in the revitalization and implementation of the revised peace agreement.
The Troika countries should not jump away from this process and entirely push it to the South Sudanese people, because they were part of that agreement and they have the resources, they have every opportunity to pressure these parties to the agreement to move this process forward. But this has not been done.
David says there must be a mechanism to hold all parties accountable, including the regional body, IGAD.
The sanctions need to be spread in the region, because we feel that some of these guys that the Troika countries are looking at and the nature of their sanctions are not really effective. We believe that most of these guys are people that do not even probably have interest of going to Britain or to Washington or even going to any of these European cities. But if we move towards a process of creating regional sanctions, I think it will be very, very effective.
The revitalization forum was proposed by IGAD heads of state in June as a last-ditch effort to revive the 2015 peace agreement in December. Analysts say the call for a forum underscores that key parts of the agreement have collapsed. The Troika said it remains appalled by the dire economic, security, human rights and humanitarian crisis being inflicted on South Sudanese by the country's leaders, and calls on the parties to revise parts of the deal that no longer reflect the reality of the conditions in South Sudan. Bonjiri Peter, director of South Sudan Humanity, says the need to hold the parties accountable must be supported by a strong mechanism.
We want to see Troika coming, not only coming to the parties who are in the conflict, but also look at those stakeholders. Try to seek JEMEC properly, because you are the body overseeing this. What milestone have you achieved? You know, why are things not moving? We have seen the efforts of IGAD is not doing much. We have seen how JEMEC is trying, but, you know, these people don't feel the pressure.
David says the role of the IGAD mediators this time round must be clearly defined in order to avoid a clash of interest among IGAD countries.
There must be a distinct difference between IGAD as a mediator and IGAD countries. What we see is that there has not been a very clear definition of the role of the mediators versus the interests of the regional countries that constitute IGAD. So this time, I think we need clarity in terms of what is it exactly that these mediators will do, and how can we deter countries or the IGAD countries from poking their nose into the process of the peace agreement based on their interests.
David says organizers should also clarify if the 2015 peace deal will be renegotiated at the forum, if participants will extend the mandate of the transitional government or start a new process altogether.
All these three confusing definitions need to be stated very clearly, and I think South Sudanese need to be given opportunity, and IGAD need to take that very seriously, that as soon as we start this process, the first step that we need to do is to define what revitalization means to South Sudan.
The Troika says it will continue to work with the regional actors to identify and hold responsible South Sudanese leaders who work against the peace through economic and other sanctions. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, the government of South Sudan says it is ready to participate in the forum to put life into the collapsed 2015 peace agreement. Government spokesman says Juba is committed to improve the peace agreement and make sure all sides that are blocking the implementation of the agreement are addressed. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
The Troika statement called on the Juba government to stop pursuing military victory and work to implement its promise to allow unfettered access to humanitarian workers. The statement also said the Troika will, quote, continue to identify and hold responsible those who work against peace, including through economic and other sanctions, unquote. It also warned that leaders who use their positions to fuel conflict and amass illicit wealth from the South Sudanese people will face consequences. South Sudan government spokesperson Michael McQuailweth insists the government is committed to restoring peace in the country and dismisses Troika's threats of sanctions.
They have the right to have their opinion. But for us, we have already clearly stated that we are for the revitalization, and that the revitalization will be inclusive. All these threats are uncalled for.
Although McQuay mentioned inclusivity in the revitalization process, he says he still has some reservations on the presence of former First Vice President Riek Machar at the talks.
Riek Machar, to me, is not an issue here. He is not the inclusivity. Inclusivity is the representation of all of the strength groups, full stop. It does not necessarily include him, but it includes his representatives.
However, without key players like Machar in the revitalization forum, his supporters and others say the process will not be successful. McQuay says the 2015 peace deal can work.
We are improving on it. We are strengthening it. Strengthen it so that some of the provisions which are unimplementable can become implementable. An example is to have the ceasefire, the cessation of hostilities, negotiate all the outstanding issues, then sign the permanent ceasefire, or accommodate the strain groups. The objective of all these is to see how best we will come out with a reasonable time frame that will lead to elections.
Sanctions imposed by the U.S. on leaders on both sides include Michael McQuay. The information minister is accused of impeding the peace process. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Reaction is mixed from South Sudanese opposition politicians to the Troika statement on the revitalization forum. A leader of United South Sudan Africa Party says he agrees with the US, the UK and Norway that the government and the armed opposition must declare permanent ceasefire. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Joseph Okello Obango, head of the United South Sudan African Party, says his group strongly agrees with the Troika that the warring parties must move quickly to lay down their weapons before the high-level revitalization forum begins this month in Addis. By declaring a ceasefire, Obango says all warring parties would demonstrate their commitment to reaching a compromise at the forum.
This has been our position also of other political parties, which we presented to the high-level level delegation that came. You cannot go for any negotiation while people are fighting. The government has actually declared a unilateral declaration of ceasefire, and this is not working.
Obango says opposition political parties in South Sudan want to see the main warring parties commit to reaching the cessation of hostilities agreement they signed in 2015 so as to restore peace and stability across the country. He says the talks should culminate in forming a real transitional government.
A government that will be inclusive, including those who have joined the rebels, so for them to participate in the government that will be done, I think the chances for a solution can come. But if we come with position that I cannot compromise, then this is where we are going to throw the South into what people are calling us now a failed state.
Stuart Soroba, chairman of the United Democratic Party, welcomes the Troika statement, but says he doubts that threatening to impose more sanction on those impeding the peace process will make a difference. Soroba says previous sanctions slapped on both military and political leaders from both sides have not been effective.
Sanctions are there leveled, but they are not implemented. And nobody on the ground can implement these sanctions to the people. They are all defied. The only solution is simply the international community should grab who is an obstacle to this. And then the international community can take steps towards him or her.
Soroba agrees including more actors in the forum is more likely to make any agreed-to deal more acceptable than the previous agreement.
We wanted an inclusive issue, inclusive discussion. Right from the grassroots, people must be represented. And these people should all go be there. They should be represented. And their voices should be heard. Their papers should be understood. Exactly what are these people after?
Soroba says he remains hopeful that peace will soon be restored in South Sudan, but says the international community must take tough measures against individuals who obstruct efforts to restore peace and stability in the country.
These people who are adamant and they don't want to listen to the voice of the people, if it is good, they can be taken and even taken to Hague. They can be taken to Hague. And the international law should take course on these people because the suffering of the people is too much now. You find people are left orphans, widows are there, still killing, some other people are not even buried.
Both Obango and Soroba are urging the government and the armed opposition to seriously commit to the revitalization forum and end the suffering of the South Sudanese people. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A research associate with Chatham House says IGAD has a long way to go mediating the South Sudan conflict. Ahmed Suleiman says the forum to revive the peace deal will only work if all the warring parties are included in the mediation process.
What we're seeing is, you know, South Sudan continuing to face this existential crisis that it has for almost 4 years now, where it's been a civil war. And you've seen a conflict in that time devolving, kind of fighting, moving across multiple fronts now. And the humanitarian picture, I probably don't have to paint for your listeners, you know, that between a third and half of the population being displaced, 8 million people in need of humanitarian assistance and essentially no economy to speak of at the moment. So we're at a really critical time, and I think this is, you know, it gets worse and worse, and I think the words are often lost, but I think it's important to, you know, always at the outset reiterate and restate how bad the situation is in South Sudan. Having said that, I mean, we have an opportunity with the high-level revitalization forum and the peace upcoming peace talks to address this crisis. And IGAD has another opportunity indeed to do so because we're at a stage where at the moment the 2015 peace agreement essentially doesn't exist. Following in particular the fighting in Juba in July of last year between the government forces and those of the former Vice President Riek Machar, we have this situation where that peace agreement has essentially collapsed and is outdated.
Let's talk about the difficulties. I mean, what are the challenges that would face IGAD in this revitalization forum? Because everybody is excited that there is going to be peace in South Sudan, the peace agreement will be resuscitated, but what are the challenges?
Well, I think the positions that are being taken. So I think the important thing is that you've got, you know, the South Sudanese government claiming there really isn't much to renegotiate at this stage, that there is, you know, peace in parts of the country, that there has been a unilateral kind of declaration of cessation of hostilities. So the IGAD is having to negotiate that position, to not renegotiate the agreement with the current realities, and also having to acknowledge, as I was saying, the grievances of now numerous armed and civilian opposition groups, many of whom have been, you know, not been part and developed since the peace agreement was signed. So these need to be now considered within this IGAD peace process if the conflict is going to be meaningfully addressed. And I think that's been the difficulty. IGAD has, since June, embarked on a series of quite inclusive consultations, I think, with up to about 48 different actors and groups. So they've included a much wider range of people in those consultations and within this upcoming process. But it's still unclear, you know, moving to December, when the forum is supposed to meet, whether this process is going to be inclusive enough of those armed groups and of civilian stakeholders and civil society as well. So I think this speaks to some of the issues that we've had with kind of process, with design, with sticking to timetable, you know, and the high-level revitalization forum has overrun its schedule. It seems it may happen again. We don't know if this process is going to, you know, end in a meeting in December, or whether it will be pushed forward.
We understand that December 17 is tentatively penciled as the date for the kickoff.
Yeah.
And even if it happens in December, what lessons should IGAD learn from its past mistakes? Because the previous mediation was, you know, a lot of analysts like you were saying that IGAD took sides during the mediation. What lessons should IGAD learn this time around?
Well, I think, you know, there are key issues that we need to really be ironed out before. You know, before you're going to into mediation, you need to have a cessation of hostilities. You need to be moving to a position where you have a permanent ceasefire. You need to have political will by the key parties to the conflict. And you need, you know, where that doesn't exist, because I think we're all realists and understand that that probably doesn't exist in all areas, you need enforcement and inducement measures, both by IGAD as well as the international community, speaking about the Troika nations, the European Union. You know, it would be beneficial to have a unified opposition platform, but that doesn't exist and is unlikely. And IGAD itself, as you just outlined, needs to show that it is a, you know, it is acting as a credible and impartial arbiter that is willing to follow through where it's difficult on tough measures.
That's Ahmed Suleiman, a research associate with Chatham House. He was speaking to me this past hour from London earlier today.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you react when you succeed?
Very happy and excited, because not all my mates have achieved that goal. So when I get money or get something, I'm happy.
I feel very excited, and I also acknowledge those that helped me to gain that credit.
I do feel happy within, but I don't make noise outside, or I don't jump, but I feel good inside me.
When I succeed, I'm very, very excited, and I like to let people know, and I take myself out, give myself a treat when I succeed.
I jubilate, yes. I call a few friends and we have like a chicken, we slaughter it somewhere. We enjoy, you know, African, yeah. Sometimes you conceal the happiness because not everybody in society wants to know you're happy.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A gender activist from South Sudan has formed a new political party. Susan Jambo says her party, the South Sudan Steps Towards Peace and Democracy, was launched on Wednesday. She says the new party stands for change through non-violence. Jambo, who was a strong supporter of President Salva Kiir, says she is joining other political parties who are struggling to bring change in South Sudan.
We are about 7 executive members, interim executive members, because we are a democratic party. So basically, for the time being, all of us are interim officials of the party until we hold the convention.
And what is the name of this party?
South Sudan Steps Towards Peace and Democracy. And in short, we call it STEPS.
You shared your manifesto and the charter of your party, and when I was going through it before talking to you, it appears there's nothing new there that you're talking about that other people have not talked about.
No, we have talked. We have talked that we 64, that means the unity of all South Sudanese, to come together in order to develop our country. So,
your former political party, the SPLM, also talks about achieving peace for the people of South Sudan, talks about unity, talks about... So what is the difference?
There are two differences. One difference is that the SPLM anchored its work on the liberation of South Sudan from North Sudan. That is where the SPLM is and has been all about. But also SPLM itself was hijacked by its luminaries, by its top brass leadership. For example, the political bureau, we're talking about the youth, we're talking about the women, we're talking about the small communities of South Sudan, we're talking about the progressive voices in the big communities, we're talking about all those excluded voices.
Susan Jambo, I hate to ask difficult questions, but I'm going to put this to you because it's in the interest of our listeners. How would you react to people in Juba who would say forming a rebel movement and forming political party has become a fashion for people who want to be in the government because through it, they will negotiate their ways to be in a position of power. And they would just say, you are doing the same. How would you convince them that you are genuine?
We actually have not formed political parties in South Sudan in a long time. There haven't been multi-partyism as a culture is not there in South Sudan. So the problem is now that the government has.
But I can list the political parties that are there. Susan, I can list. You have the former governor of Western Equatoria has his party. Gabriel Changson has his party. Taban Dengai has his party. Riek Machar has a party. You know, the list is just endless.
I will continue to, the difference between the other groups is that they all have armed wings. And it seems the language that we are fearing and we don't appreciate as well in South Sudan is that if you oppose the government, then you form a political party with an armed wing. But when you look at the South Sudanese themselves, they're tired of war. They're tired of bloodshed. Is the solution another frontline, another military armed frontline? That's not the solution. And that's why we say that our party is a peaceful party. It's all about peaceful means. We're not going to fight with any guns.
How are you going to achieve your objectives if you're not going to use guns?
This is exactly the miracle or the magic word here is that...
The reason why I put that question, the system you want to change is armed to their teeth. And so it is the military language that they understand. It's not about non-violence. You are dealing with generals who have been there for years, and it's their mainstay. How are you going to use peaceful means with people who are armed to their teeth?
If you look at the population of South Sudan, the majority are civilians, and they are unarmed. And they're the ones who are suffering the brunt of war. They're the ones who are suffering the militarized culture that we have in South Sudan. They are the ones who are ready and hungry for peace and peacefulness. They are the ones who do not want to see any bloodshed of their children, their mothers.
You told me that you launched your party yesterday. Where was it launched?
It was launched somewhere. I don't want to disclose that information.
And how would people who are interested in joining your party join you if you don't disclose the information about your party?
We will... swiftly soon work on appointing interim officials who have come forward to volunteer inside South Sudan in different states.
Why did you time the formation of your party close to the revitalization forum for resuscitating the South Sudan peace deal. Why is the timing so close to that?
As a peaceful party, we believe in any peaceful means in resolving the conflict in South Sudan. So the revitalization of the ARCUS agreement, the agreement on the resolution of the conflict of South Sudan, is a good process, a good step. We appreciate the efforts by the warring parties.
Help me to clear some doubts here. When did you resign from the ruling SPLM party? Because most people still believe Susan Jambo is SPLM and SPLM is Susan Jambo.
Susan Jambo resigned from the SPLM officially in January 2017.
Was there any document to that effect?
Yeah, I did write a note to the SPLM leadership that I no longer become part of the SPLM, and I also did a couple of videos to that effect.
That's Susan Jambo, the founder of a new political party called South Sudan Steps Towards Peace and Democracy. She asked this program not to disclose her location for security reasons. She was speaking to me yesterday. Today is the World AIDS Day, an opportunity to show support for those living with HIV and to commemorate people who have died from the disease-related illness. It is also a chance for nations to reflect on the progress they are making in the fight against the pandemic. A new report finds more men are dying from AIDS than women. That's because fewer men get tested for HIV or seek life-saving treatment. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds men have what it calls a blind spot when it comes to getting tested for HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. And if they do not know their HIV status, the report says men are unlikely to get treatment and will die. UNAIDS says the situation is particularly acute in sub-Saharan Africa, where men and boys living with HIV are 20% less likely than HIV-positive women and girls to know their status. The report says even larger numbers are less likely to seek treatment and warns that people who are not being treated are more likely to transmit the AIDS virus. While more women are likely to be living with HIV, more men are likely to die from this fatal disease, says Peter Gies, the chief strategy officer at UNAIDS. He says the reason is that fewer men than women receive antiretroviral therapy, citing a figure of 47% for men compared to 60% for women.
Then also, once people are on treatment, we find that men are actually less likely to be fully observant or adherent to their treatment. And so it results actually in higher mortality of men living with HIV than women in living with HIV. And so about 58% of all the AIDS-related deaths that were observed in 2016 are occurring among men, even though there are more women living with HIV.
Global trends on the HIV/AIDS epidemic are generally positive. New data show AIDS-related deaths have declined by nearly half since a peak in 2005. But the epidemic is far from over. UNAIDS reports nearly 2 million people worldwide became newly affected with HIV last year, and more than 1 million people died from AIDS-related illnesses. The report shows fewer men than women visit healthcare facilities and so are less likely to be diagnosed with life-threatening conditions. It says many men avoid getting tested because they fear being stigmatized by knowing their HIV status. Many others, it says, refrain from receiving life-saving treatment because they believe they are invincible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Friday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. See you on Monday.